from the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona. This is Market Movers, the podcast that gives you a closer look at the financial markets to trade responsibly. Here are your hosts, Lior Cohen and Yochai Elam.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us, hitting the subscribe button and telling about the show to a friend, family member, or a coworker. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen. And joining me, following this podcast recording, he will make his own YouTube video of his Thanksgiving turkey recipe, at least so he claims, Yochai Elam. How's it going, Yochai?
Hi, Lior. Yeah, I'm doing great. Well, let me share the recipe. Just go to the supermarket and buy a prepared turkey. And there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're a real-time naked chef. Wow, that's a first from you.
Yeah.
That's real good. Yeah, and in preparation for Thanksgiving, we're going to talk about market liquidity during holiday season. What to expect, what to do. The recent economic reports from the UK, including the minutes of the MPC meeting and inflation report, and the latest US GDP report for the third quarter. Finally, we'll talk about China's rate cuts. That was a big headline, and we'll see what the ins and outs and the what have yous, of course.
You know, this is a very complicated case, Mom. A lot of ins, a lot of outs.
But first, market liquidity during holiday season. So, Yochai, we have Thanksgiving up and coming, and then we have Christmas. There are a lot of holidays ahead of us. We should expect some lower volume, of course. People going on vacations. It's going to be a bit of a snooze, right? That's the main idea we're going to expect, or could there be sudden sharp changes and sudden volatility or something like that?
Well, normally the holiday season, which in the United States begins around Thanksgiving and then everything slows down, is usually characterized by low volume. That means that not much is happening in the markets. We have much longer hours of flatline charts. That's most of the time.
But this also means that we can also expect maybe a little bit more action from speculators, right? And hedge funds. They know that this is an occurrence that tends to happen this time of the year, and they try maybe to exploit low liquidity. It doesn't mean maybe not much for the small traders, except to take into account there could be some sudden changes, but for the most part, it's probably going to be a bit of a snoozer, and the low liquidity means a little bit less volatility. If we gather up a little bit of information just to get a little bit of sense of the market, we look at the S&P 500 between 2007 and 2013. I'm talking about the days before and after Thanksgiving. So we can see that 2 days before Thanksgiving, volume on average were 4.3 billion shares. Then it goes down to 3.6 billion on the day before Thanksgiving. On the day after Thanksgiving, it's 1.87. So that's 46% on average, 46% drop off compared to the preceding day. 2 days after, it goes back up to 3.9 billion, jumps right up to that range. So the big drop off tends to occur 1 day after Thanksgiving, but also there is a bit of a decline on the day before.
Yeah, and don't worry, the market is going to be there afterwards, so you don't need to chase the trade
and take into account that changes may occur in the prices. Again, if we look at the S&P, it's usually less than 0.5% change in the S&P index during this time of the year. There was a little bit of a more commotion during 2 days after, but that's in certain years. I mean, if you look at back in 2007, for instance, there was a little bit more volatility during Thanksgiving and again in 2008, but those are at the eve of the economic meltdown, and then in 2008, the economic meltdown, so there's also these factors to consider. Yeah. But for the most part, you don't see. Yeah, so it's also the same in Forex, Yochai, not just in equities, right?
Yeah, that means what we said before, we have low volume. That means trading is very boring, very slow. But we also have low liquidity. That means not many orders are lined up, not to the downside, not to the upside. That means that one big order or one big event can rock the market more than usual, break technical support and resistance lines, wreak havoc. This doesn't happen that much, though, but basically, you have long hours of boredom with extreme moves. Perhaps it's like air traffic controllers in airports where nothing happens and then you have three planes landing at the same time. But this year, in 2014, I think we won't have phenomenons like we had in the past where we reached new highs in euro dollar and Aussie dollar between Christmas and New Year's. There are better chances than not that it'll be a good time for a vacation.
So that's the best advice. Just take on vacation. Most likely it will be low liquidity, low shifts in the market. So there's too much to expect in regards to what's where the market is heading, right? It's not going to change significantly during this time of the year.
Yeah, opportunities will present themselves in the new year. If you have a planned vacation, just enjoy yourself. It's better to just fully disconnect from the world. Enjoy the vacation. Don't worry, the market will be back. If you aren't on vacation, if you have some spare time to dig into trading, I would suggest looking back a bit, analyzing previous trades, do some long-term reading, Forex-related or not Forex-related, perhaps examine new trading systems, preferably don't enter the market. If you do trade, if you can't hold yourself back...
We are some people who just like to trade, man. What do you expect?
Of course, it's fun, just that markets can be boring. If you do trade, take it as not as a low volatility period, because you might experience those air pockets, those extremes. It's better being safe than sorry, and trade as if volatility is extreme. That means with the lower leverage and more caution. The real market events, the technical lines, they will act much better when volume and liquidity are higher.
Okay, and by the way, I did a little bit of digging and a little bit of research. Just to see what the academics have to say about it. There isn't too much about the holiday effect, or if there is a holiday effect. Not like as opposed to, for instance, the January effect. Everybody have already talked about it in details, and it's pretty well substantiated. Just for people who... aren't familiar with it, it means and there is tends to be an increase in stock prices during January due to a rise in stocks buying, and this follows after prices that tend to go down during December when investors seek to take losses off the table and offset their capital gains in order to for tax purposes, of course. So there tend to be a little bit of a decline in December and bounce back in January. So that's the January effect. There have been a lot of research papers on it, but from what I've gathered, there's one paper by two university professors from Valencia. They invested the existence of a pre-holiday effect in deleting stocks in the Spanish Stock Exchange, and that were also traded in the New York Stock Exchange and the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, and they showed that there are some abnormal high returns on the trading day prior to holidays.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, and the same goes for another study done on the Aussie stock market between 96 and 2006, and the researchers, a different set of researchers, also examined other holidays, eight specific holidays in the Aussie market. They also saw that there is some evidence for a pre-holiday effect in the small cap stocks, and mainly in the retail industry. So there might be a little bit of a pre-holiday effect during these times. There could be some positive returns on days before trading, but for specific sectors and maybe for small stocks, but it's not something that is more ubiquitous and more substantiated as other market trends, as January effect or something like that. So it's not something that you can tradable or maybe plan ahead. So it should be taken with a grain of salt. Following this market liquidity, let's move on to the UK across the pond. In Yohai, there are some big news and some interesting reports that came out. And what are they are and what does it mean for the markets?
So the big event is the inflation report. It comes only once per quarter from the Bank of England. It was quite dovish. It had a big cut in CPI expectations. And Mark Carney, the governor, also said that they expect the CPI to fall below the 1% level. That means he'll have to write an explanation letter to Chancellor Osborne in the UK explaining what happened and what they want to do about it. It's a bit unpleasant.
So is this like a note from the teacher that now because, or it's like Bart Simpson writing on the wall, I won't do that again hundreds of times? Is this kind of letter, it's like something that with, let's put it with air quotes, has to be punished for it because Bank of England did what it's supposed to do and didn't bring CPI up in the range that's supposed to come?
Yeah, he won't be punished for it. He'll get his high salary anyway. But
oh, that's a load off my mind.
Yeah. He can celebrate Christmas quite easily. Anyway, there is no danger of deflation in the UK. The economy is doing quite well in general. But that was still a dovish report. On the other hand, afterwards we had the meeting minutes from the last meeting, and they were relatively hawkish. They did see improvement in wages, for example. And two members still voted for a rate hike in November, despite the fall in inflation, despite everything said.
So it's not a consensus, right? People on the board do, some of them, at least two that we know of, voted against it, voted for a rate hike earlier than what Governor Carney actually wanted.
Yeah, it's not the first time these two voted for a rate hike, but it's the first time after inflation has fallen and after the inflation report was composed and the fall in oil prices, everything in that direction, and the cooling down of the UK economy, which is not that bad, but isn't as strong as it was beforehand. So it was still surprising, and it lifted the pound. And we had some good figures that supported these two members, from retail sales that jumped up 0.8%. They were expected actually to fall. We have another good sign from the UK economy, the purchasing managers' indices, the PMIs. They are going in the right direction, which is for construction, it's actually down, sliding a bit. It's not too hot. Manufacturing, which was the weakest, is rising. And services, which is the biggest and most important sector, is steady. I am still bullish on the UK economy.
So what do we need to expect coming forward?
Well, the main events remain the meeting minutes. It has a huge impact on markets, not the rate decision itself. Headline inflation, of course, which is the mandate of the Bank of England, and wages, which are increasingly important. We have to note also the politics of the UK. UK is going to elections in May, and campaigning has already basically begun, even though it seems quite far away. We have a rise of the right-wing party UKIP, which is anti-euro. They want the UK to leave the Eurozone. They won some seats in by-elections, 2 seats so far, and it hurts the Conservatives, which are in power right now. So we hear Prime Minister Cameron and his mates sort of trying to court those Eurosceptics, blaming the Eurozone for disinflation, blaming the Eurozone for lack of growth, and so forth.
Don't blame me. I didn't do it.
And one more thing related to politics, Mark Carney and his mates at the BOE cannot ignore politics. So, if we have a heating economy, I think the last timing for a rate hike would be March, before the elections in May. He wouldn't want to do it in April. He wouldn't want to be seen as hurting the government. And he wouldn't do it immediately in June after the, or May after the elections. He doesn't want to be seen as supporting the government and raising the rates only after the elections. So I think July is the earliest. So if we don't see a rate hike by March, which currently most analysts don't expect it to come, but I think it's still possible, then we can expect to see it only in July. And we have to note that the elections are becoming more and more important also around Christmas.
So it means that the elections will take a role, a significant role, if you will, according to your account, on the rate hike, right? That's something that could that does influence the MPC, Governor Carney's actual decision, even though it's supposed not to.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want to be seen as interfering. So around the elections, I think we have a relatively wide time frame in which we will not hear anything from the Bank of England. So it's either before or after. In order to see a rate hike before, we need to see better figures from the UK. I mean, more improvement in wages, inflation to pick up, not to dip below 1%, GDP revisions to be okay. Usually they don't change that much. And if things stay just okay, I think we'll have to wait until July. And this is, of course, critical for the strength or weakness of the British pound.
Okay. From across the pond, let's move across the Atlantic to the US. We had some results from the GDP, the second estimate of the third quarter real GDP growth rate came out today. We're talking Tuesday, November 25th, it came out with at 3.9%, higher than expected. The estimates were around 3.3%. It's improvement from the first estimate. Back then it was at 3.5%. So all in all, it looks pretty good. So now break us through it and now put the pinch of salt into these numbers, Yohai.
Yeah, so there's a lot of salt here. One is an open wound. It's the crisis in the Middle East. So we have ISIS in Iraq and Syria, and we have the US government spending on defense spending. And well, actually, they're dropping bombs, so it's not that creative. Let's call it that way. So government spending is not seen as a real positive, especially if it goes overseas. Another spending is Ebola, which you mentioned last time. It's also not exactly something productive into the U.S. economy. And we have also a regular thing not related to any global crisis. It's inventories. When we have inventories rise, it means that that's more production, that's stronger GDP. But then you have all this stuff in inventories.
Yeah, just stocking up. You don't actually consume it. You only stock it up. So
what happens afterwards?
Yeah, there we go. So what are you going to do with that? And when you look at the consumption, the personal consumption, you see that personal consumption expenditures rose by 2.2% in the third quarter compared to 2.5% in the second quarter. So if anything, there has been a little bit of a decline in personal consumption.
Yeah, and that's the largest part of the U.S. economy. I think the U.S. economy is doing well. No danger of deflation. We're still seeing nice growth, but it isn't that strong as a 3.9 annualized growth rate suggests. We have to remember that for 2014, we had a very weak first quarter. And even if we have an okay fourth quarter, we're still going to see growth below 2.5% for the year. Of course, it's better to have more growth than less growth, but buildup of inventories means they will probably be depleted at least a bit. So inventories will be actually a drag on Q4 growth, as many analysts have pointed, and I certainly agree. So it's not all that good news, and we see this reaction from the US dollar, which was initially positive, but didn't last long. We'll have to see more up-to-date data for the fourth quarter, and it needs to be a bit more upbeat.
Yeah, and for now, if we look back at the publications of the GDP reports, the first, second, and third, and the revisions and the difference between actual GDP growth rate and the expected growth rate, we see that, again, we should take it with a pinch of salt, and because this is only based on a very few sample points, but it does seem that the US dollar against the Japanese yen, which is the least volatile and is more reacting to what happened in the US than other currency pairs, we do see that there is a positive relation between the two, between, on the one hand, the changes in the US dollar yen on the day of the publication, and between the difference between the actual GDP growth rate and the expected. So when the actual growth rate is higher than expected, the US dollar tends to rally against the yen, and this is something that's pretty common. It's what you would have expected in any way. On the other hand, when you look at other assets such as commodities, including silver and gold, it doesn't seem that there isn't too much of a reaction from these commodities after you take into account that in the first estimate that was released this year, it came following the meeting of the FOMC. So even though the first estimate is supposed to be the one that makes all the rocking of the boat, we still have to put an asterisk on it because it came the day after the FOMC convened.
I'm absolutely sure they get to see the data before we do.
Yeah, exactly. So they even take into account, and this is something that when they release their results and what they think will happen with their monetary policy, it also comes into account, takes a lump sum in to together with the GDP reports. I'm certain of that as well. So they have a little bit of a jump on it. But still, at least from the market point of view, when you look at the reaction on commodities, at least in the precious metals, you don't see much of a reaction. It's mostly driven by what the Fed has done, and the second and third estimates don't seem to make a lot of changes, even if there are big revisions. And in the US dollar, there is a bit of a relation, and the US dollar does react to it, but still, it's only based on a small sample, so we should take it with a pinch of salt. Mm-hmm. From the US, let's move back to Asia, and we had some big news in China. And on November 21st, on Friday, they brought us some big news, right, Yuhai?
Yeah, they cut the rates for the first time since July 2012. The timing was surprising. But they do like to surprise us. But the actual move was not that surprising.
So for you, you did expect that they will do something about it, even though it has been their policy for the past couple of years or so to curb down the economic progress, to reduce inflation pressures. That's what they have been aiming in the past couple of years or so. So what has changed?
Well, they did see quite a slowdown. Most of it was engineered and should be seen as a blessing for China and as for the rest of the world. We'll explain that soon. But perhaps this time it was a bit too much, the fall in industrial production, the ongoing stagnant purchasing managers indices, all that together. It was probably not enough for them to do these very small limited moves, so they made an across-the-board move. On the other hand, they did say it's not a change in policy. They tried to tone down the actual move. I would see it more as a reaction to Japan's policy, especially the last move by Japan of enlarging the QE program and the changes in allocations for the pension fund over there. It's sort of part of the currency war, as I would see it. So all in all, this move is also part of the currency wars going on, especially with Japan. China is going in the right direction in its efforts to rebalance the economy, and I think we should take it as a good move.
So what happened? So on Friday, they came out, the People's Bank of China reduced its one-year deposit rate by 25 basis points to 2.75% and its one-year lending rate by 0.4 percentage points to 5.6%. So, and this is the first time in recent history that the main kahunas from Beijing actually addressed the economic slowdown and try to address it head on. When we look forward, we see that the current expectations are for China's GDP for the fourth quarter to reach a 7.3% growth rate, annual rate, of course. And the IMF has also reduced China's GDP for 2014 and 2015 to 7.4% and 7.1% respectively. So we see that there is a slowdown, and there are expectations for a further slowdown next year, unless, of course, this is a actual shift. Because these small changes, Yuhai, you will probably agree with me, right? It's not something to make big of a shift in the market, but it could maybe change the perception of what government in Beijing actually sees the economy is heading, and maybe are willing to make more changes heading forward.
Yeah, I think they're doing a series of small calibrations, and this time it was a relatively bigger one, but again, it was balanced with these words that it's just a small move or something like that. I think, well, you can look at it in both ways. One way is it's more stimulus, it's good for China, they're going to experience more growth, and so is Australia and everybody else. You can also look at it as fear. If China is finally reacting, it means the situation is worse. I don't think there's too much to worry about. I do think they are making a successful effort to move the economy away from too much classic industry, too much investment, some malinvestment in infrastructure as well. All this towards more internal consumption with their stronger exchange rate as well, more services and even more innovation. Not only reverse engineering.
Okay, and what does it mean for New Zealand, Australia?
For New Zealand, it's good news because they export mostly milk, dairy products, and things like that. So it means Chinese consumers will have a stronger yuan and more money in their pockets to buy all these goods from New Zealand. For Australia, it means less investment, which means less consumption of Australia's iron ore and copper. All in all, also there, it's important to remember that Chinese growth has slowed down from around double digits to 7%. People are still moving into cities, still a lot going on in China. Australia is not expected to fall into a recession. It's just over the peak in terms of its mining boom.
But you still think that this is a big shift in China's policy, and this cut is something that is substantial?
It is. It is substantial because they're probably not, Chinese authorities, the kahunas, are not willing to see the economy slow down too much, and they are there to support. It might create, of course, moral hazard, but
yeah, but still, how do you expect to have such a big shift? I'm not saying it's not a big shift in their policy, but I don't think that this rate cut of a 2.5 percentage point is a big deal. I mean, it's pretty still high. It's from 2.75%. For China, it's not high, but for when you look at the other economies, when you look at Canada and the US, Japan, those economies are in a different mode. I'm not saying they are in the same ship as China, but they are in much lower rates. So it's not like they are made a big change in their interest rates by any account or measure.
Yeah, when you compare China to the rest of the world, you get some proportions. And
well, that's also about the growth rate, of course, and they are very different. Economies by whole, but still. Okay, so we're gonna put it on hold and see where the chips will fall on China's economy and whether or not they'll actually continue with this shift. If they'll continue to reduce rates, that will be something that will maybe reverse the slowdown that they had in the past several months or so. Okay, so that's it for now. Thank you as usual, Yuhain.
Thank you, Leon.
Yeah, thank you all for listening. And if you like the show, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. You can subscribe to the show via Stitcher, email, RSS, or iTunes. Whatever suits you fancy. So until next week, this is Lior signing off for Yochai, saying have a great week and invest responsibly.
For comments, suggestions, and questions, visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingnrg.com, where you can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. Our listeners make Market Movers possible.